offering most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's Shravanam, Mananam, Nirtidhyasanam. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai with Sai Prakash. The 1991 Summer Course series is what we are going through, and we are in the third discourse. We are fairly midway in that discourse. A very, very profound discourse. And definitely it's probably drawing out the best we can think of and the best we can come up with. And it's been a very, very challenging discourse. It's just going to get even more profound. And that's the beauty, because in most discourses, as profound as it is in the beginning and in the middle, towards the end, the way Swami ends it gives us a beautiful picture of what is the direct take-home lesson from that. And we are more than waiting to get to that part of the discourse. So to go through this discourse again and to probably summarize what we've gone through in the last couple of weeks, let's ask Sai Prakash to join us. Sai Ram, Sai Prakash.
Sai Ram Prem. Yes, I don't know what you mean by the word profound. But definitely it is difficult to comprehend.
Right, absolutely.
I mean, everything is profound, but this portion, it really kept your mind, engaged, I would say.
Right, absolutely. I mean, as I was just telling you, it's such a wonder to even think that somebody could come up with these things, you know, even
exactly.
These simple understandings of
right.
The different roles of the mind and how these concepts actually beyond the mind, and then the mind is able to come up with these explanations.
I mean, that's why they say that kaschid dhiraha. They said somebody who is absolutely courageous, only he can actually take up this quest for reality. It's not for the weak-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
And this discourse especially has really opened a totally new dimension and of our understanding. And it's almost that Tattvamasi, that's the name of this chapter. And so you find elements of Tat being discussed, and you find elements of Tvam being discussed. So how do this Tat and Tvam, how are they one? So I think that is the gist of this entire chapter. So when you say Tat and when you say Tvam, what are the two things? I think in the beginning of the discourse, Swami said, Tat is like the senses and the mind. And Tvam is the divinity, is the Atman. So, how do you relate the senses and the mind and the physical body with all these limitations, as I would call them? How would you relate that to Tvam? So, I think that's what this chapter is all about.
Right. And when you say Asi, you know, in one point Swami says it's the mind that connects the body and the
exactly.
Atma. You know,
exactly.
The most gross is the body, the most subtle is the Atman and the mind which connects it. So in many ways that Asi or that state in which you are, depending on where it is it closer to the body? Is it closer in association with the body, or is it trying to free itself in its association with the mind, with the Atman? That's what defines that Asi, and that's what defines each one of us as a personality. You know, are we more, do we believe more that we are the body? Do we at least have the slightest realization that probably we are not the body?
Right.
We are greater than that. In fact, I was talking to Arvind yesterday, we were discussing for the other program. He was telling about a discourse in which Swami, very beautifully, he says, you know, what is the goal of human life? And, of course, being tutored in Swami's discourses, I think we all would say that the goal of human life is to realize that we are divine, whatever it is. But Swami was saying that at any point in time, there are two purposes, or there are two goals which you strive for. One is to protect your body. One is to protect this life, and the other is to go beyond the body.
Okay.
Right. Swami was
exactly.
Very beautifully playing with words. He said, one is dhanyam, the other is dhyanam.
Beautiful.
He says, you have to sustain this body, you have to take care of this body. At the same time, do the contemplation which will take you beyond the body.
Beyond the body. Yeah, I mean, the body is required, the body is needed for you to take the next step. And, this whole question of what is this and what is that, and who is it that actually animates it, motivates it, conducts the whole show? That has been kind of asked in the Keno Upanishad. You know, there were links to what we were discussing to the Chandogya Upanishad.
Upanishad, right.
So, obviously, I went back to Swami's Upanishad Vahini and saw the link. And there, when we come to that part, we'll discuss how Uddalaka taught Shvetaketu. But, you know, by accident, I skipped a few pages before that. And Swami was speaking about the Keno Upanishad in the Upanishad Vahini. So what struck me is, there Swami is beautifully describing what is this and what is that. So he says, in fact, Keno Upanishad gets its name because it starts with questions of who.
Right.
Who? He says, who impels the mind to alight on its objects? Enjoined by whom does the vital force proceed to function? At whose behest men utter speech? What intelligence indeed directs the eyes and ears? So what he says is, when we have these five senses, you perceive a thing. You perceive and you get the knowledge of that particular thing.
Okay.
So you gain the knowledge through these five senses. Okay. But on its own, do the five senses, are they capable of getting knowledge? No. That what information is being perceived by the five senses has to be interpreted by the mind.
Absolutely.
So the mind is what is subtler or more is greater than the senses. And the mind takes that information and it processes it. So once the mind processes it, you know, it's a way of saying that the mind actually goes out through the senses.
Right.
It goes out through the mind, it goes out through the eyes, it goes out through the ears, it goes out through the mouth. And it becomes the object itself. Like suppose I am seeing this mic in front of me. The mind goes out through my eyes and forms the object. It becomes the mic for me.
Hmm.
So, now the question is, does the mind exist on its own?
Okay.
So, first the senses have to depend on the mind, and the mind cannot exist on its own. It has to depend on the Atman. So, what Swami says is, this combination of mind and senses, which are achetana, which are, you know, non-intelligent.
Right.
How can they comprehend the chetana, the supreme intelligence? Okay. So, very beautifully here Swami is saying, here a doubt arises.
Okay.
He says, the doubt is, now the eyes are seeing, the ears are hearing, all this is happening. Is this directly due to the force of the Atman, or are they happening on their own? Okay. The mind and the senses, do they act on their own, or is it because of the Atman?
Okay,
so we think that, okay, if everything is happening due to Atman, this is also due to Atman, then how come the senses and the mind go astray? When we say they go astray, how do they happen? How does it actually happen?
Right.
So, then this beautiful analogy is given. And Swami says, you know, it's like the sun. Millions of things happen because of the sunlight. Mm-hmm. Millions of things happen because of sunlight, but the sun is not responsible for what all is happening. So in the presence of the Atman, in the presence of the Atmic power, that Tejas, Swami calls it Tejas, the power of the Atma is Tejas, that spiritual power, the senses work, the mind works. He says, but because of the Atman they work, but the Atman is not responsible for what they do. Okay, in the presence of the Atman. So, this clearly defines Tat and Tvam.
Right.
So, very beautifully, what is that Tat? Tat is this body with senses, with mind. And Tvam is that Atman. So, he says, what is the relation between this Tat and Tvam? And this was, you know, in the last paragraph of, where Swami is describing that, he very beautifully sums it up in that Upanishad Vahini. He says, the wonder is, the Atma is inactive and without qualifications.
Mm-hmm.
The Atma does not have qualifications. It is. He says it is that isness. You know, the Atma is. The Atma cannot be defined by anything. The Atma defines everything. So the senses cannot define the Atma, but the Atma defines the senses. That's how it is. He says the wonder is, the Atma is inactive and without qualifications. It does not get anything done with the manas or the senses. Remember, they get activated by the very presence of the Atma. The rays of the sun are not aware of all the activity they invoke. The Atma is not responsible for the activity of the senses. This is the teaching which was given by Varuna to his son Bhrigu in the Keno Upanishad.
Mm-hmm.
I feel, you know, it makes things so clear. It says, yes, you are limited with a body, with the senses, with a mind. At the same time, you are Atman. How do you bridge the two?
Right. In fact, Swami gives another beautiful analogy in a discourse, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Swami says, how can you lift the rock on which you are standing?
Exactly.
Right. That which is the basis of your, you know, presence or your standing there, how can you lift that?
Exactly.
So how can the mind understand, you know, yeah, the Atman?
And he also gives that, you know, it's like the thief, you know, in 1990 series.
Right.
So
right,
when he was talking about the mind, he says it's like the thief, right, wearing the dress of a policeman and trying to catch himself.
Absolutely. So, in fact, you know, I would often think that analogy which Swami gives, of course, the Vedantic analogy of the mind as a mirror, and Swami would say that the three flaws the mind has.
Hmm.
You know, that's actually the closest we can get to understanding it through worldly examples.
Right.
Because when you look at it, you know, Swami would say that you're not one but three.
Hmm.
What others think you are. And I would always have that confusion in that when Swami says your mind is what others think you are.
Hmm.
I would think probably it should be the other way around. The body should be what others think I am, because that's the thing they see.
Correct.
And I see the mind more than my body most of the time, you know, unless I'm standing in front of the mirror or, you know, the, attending to my body. I'm not thinking of myself as the body. I'm all the time actually with my mind.
Right.
So it should be the other way around. But if you bring this idea that, you know, the mind is a mirror, the mind is actually reflecting what is within, which is the, you know, the true self or the Atman or whatever. And all the time we are only polishing this mirror or stabilizing this mirror.
Correct.
And probably a Jivan Mukta or a Jnani is one whose mind perfectly reflects the Atman. It's still not the Atman whom you see in front of you.
Exactly.
He's only that mind perfectly reflecting the Atman within. And the more you reflect, the more evolved you are, or elevated you are, whatever it is.
Very true.
And that's why Swami would say probably, you know, what others think you are is the mind, because they're always looking at your mind which reflects the truth within.
Yeah. In fact, another beautiful summary of this whole topic, he says, by the process of knowing other things, by the process of knowing, other things can be known, not knowledge itself. By the process of knowing, other things can be known, not knowledge itself. Because it is through knowledge that you try to know. The knowledge is the basis.
Right.
So, it's a very interesting topic. And you know, Swami gives this beautiful triangle in the beginning of this discourse. There are several layers, as we discussed, the body, mind and soul. Then we have bhukti, mukti, rakti, jiva, deva and prakriti.
Right.
So, then Swami went on to, you know,
the relationship between Om and Soham.
Yes, Om and Soham.
Right.
And this is also very interesting, because he says, in deep sleep, that so splits into S and O. Hum splits into Hu and M. And then so if S and Hu go off, it becomes Om again. So that's how Soham is actually becoming Om.
Right.
And so it's there is no delusion that is created by the mind in deep sleep. That's what it translates into.
Right.
In deep sleep, you are not deluded by what the mind is doing and what the senses are feeding the mind. That's what it means.
And I think it's in that Upanishad Vahini, especially the chapter on Chandogya Upanishad, where Swami speaks about you know, the difference when the life leaves the body.
Mm-hmm.
If you are realized and if you are not realized.
Yes, that's
part very,
is very
beautiful,
very,
because I think there Swami says, you know, if you've lived a life of material life, a worldly life,
right,
your life leaves out through your senses, Swami says.
Exactly.
Right? And on the contrary, if you're a person who has understood what you are in the deep sleep state when awake.
Right.
That oneness, what Swami describes in this discourse as, you know, soham becoming om. If you're able to have that understanding when awake, Swami says the prana goes into the heart, Swami says, right?
Exactly.
The hridaya akasha it goes into.
Yes.
And from there the spinal cord, and from the spinal cord it reaches the, I think, Surya Loka or something like that.
Yeah, through Sushumna it goes to Surya Loka, and then it goes to Brahma Loka.
Right. I mean, when I was reading that, I was wondering, how did people come up with this? You know, how did they even find out, you know, something like this is happening in a human body?
Yeah, we are so used to, you know, just thinking this is me and just go ahead. I mean, what compelled them? What, you know, drove them towards trying to find out the reality of existence?
Right. And of course, this last part of that discourse which we played last week, I mean, we were totally clueless, but just looking at that, maybe a little bit of understanding we can get. I mean, this is actually the dialogue between Narada and Sanat Kumara. Sanat Kumara gives this explanation to Narada.
Yes.
I mean, I can make a little more sense if I go reverse. You know, Swami of course starts with by saying that all that the knowledge that you gather, all that scriptures which you read, and Swami equates that to the degrees that you collect. Swami says it's all only a name.
Correct.
So name is not important. What is greater than name is, of course, is the speech. What is greater than speech is the mind. If you, I mean, going right to the end of it, Swami speaks about, the last thing Swami speaks about is the principle of life.
Prana.
You know, life force, Swami
right.
says.
Right.
So looking at it that way, Swami is saying the most important thing is to be alive. Because, you know, whenever Swami speaks about human birth, Swami says it's such a precious thing. It's such a precious birth to be born as a human. So that is the basis of this entire understanding, this process of understanding.
Correct.
And, you know, many times when you look at, there are a lot of people when you look at, you know, from our point of view, you wonder they have nothing to live, really.
Purpose.
Yeah, probably, you know, somebody who is disabled, probably who lost every dear one in the family. You have a lot of people like that, where there is that desire to live is not there. You know, there's
Correct.
No worth for their life anymore. Even those people, they don't realize that, you know, Swami would say that being born a human being, forget about doing anything, achieving anything.
Right.
Just to be born a human being is so precious. And that's precisely what Swami says, the life force is the most important. And then, of course, Swami, when you go back, Swami says the tejas, that brilliance comes out of food.
Exactly.
I mean, water, Swami says, right?
Yeah. So that brilliance is subtler than water, is greater than water.
Right.
And then, see, going reverse is one way of looking at it. But just to summarize what actually happens, I think Narada, after mastering all the 64 different forms of knowledge, he's still not at peace. Basically, he says that he does not experience a peace of mind. And then when he goes to Sanat Kumara, he says, what is the use of any number of studies? And he says, all this is corresponding to the name. It's like a name. Like, I have studied so much, this much knowledge. He says, this is just like a name, giving a name to what you have achieved and studied. And he says, speech, on the other hand, is subtler than name, because whatever you know is
to be able to express
it only through speech. But speech alone is not anything, because what gives meaning to the speech is the mind, because it translates your speech, and possibly when you hear something, when you hear somebody else speak, that's what governs and brings emotions into you, feelings into you. So the mind is greater or subtler than the, or greater than speech. Then he says, yes, the mind can be controlled with willpower. So if you have the will, you know, and we have that famous Abhyasa in a Chanchalam Hi Mana Krishna, he says the mind is very turbulent, but he says if you have the will and through practice, Abhyasa, you can conquer. You can conquer the mind. So that will is greater than the mind. Then how do you get, what do you do with that will? See, you have, when you have some memories which are experiences, which really with a clear mind, as you said, when we don't have too many thoughts clogging our mind, the memories of such experiences is what will bring about that will in us.
I think one more way of looking at it, of course, even in the same Upanishad, Vayani Swami gives that example, that if you're a scholar, you've learnt all of these things. Swami says death is the equalizer, you know, it's the leveler, because at death, after death, you lose all your knowledge and it goes. So Swami says what is important is to collect that knowledge that becomes part of your memory, which travels with you over births. And Swami says that is chitta.
Right.
Because, and then Swami explains that any decision that you make is based on the memory. When you say, you know, vasanas, or when you talk about the impulses which guide you to, you have fear of something, you have liking towards something, you know, you're adventurous, or you know, you want to be in your comfort zone. All of this comes because of that influence of the chitta. And Swami says that, you know, collect that knowledge which will get embedded in this chitta and which will influence that will.
Exactly.
You know, that will to do, or will to have it, and will to struggle, strive, whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, what is an experience without memory?
Right.
Like, you cannot have an experience if unless there is memory.
Absolutely.
Suppose I'm experiencing something wonderful, but if I don't have memory of it, the experience is lost. So, you know, so subtler than memory is meditation, what Swami says. And of course, Swami has spoken extensively about meditation. He says concentration, contemplation, meditation, which is the highest form of, you know, trying to feel that oneness. So through meditation, and Swami has spoken in Dhyanavahini, Swami has given details of how we could do meditation. And that experience of oneness with the Lord. And, you know, first you see the Lord as, you see the chosen form and utter the chosen name of your Lord. And then you feel that oneness with the Lord. That meditation is got through Chitta Shuddhi. And when you get that awareness, that is jnana, that is the knowledge. That is the spiritual knowledge. So he says, beyond meditation is jnana. Then comes this beautiful part of water. He says, water is greater than jnana. You know, this is a point where, like last time we paused and wondered what it actually meant. But in other references, like the Upanishad, Vayani Swami has said, water is essential for life. So unless, in fact, you can, as the next paragraph says, you can actually live without food for few days, but you can't live without water. So water, you need to, even to get that wisdom, to, you know, go into meditation, to have that memory, to do have a will, all that earlier steps, you need to be alive. You know, you need water to be alive. So water comes in there. And then he says, Tejas is greater than water. Now, Tejas, I'm looking at it as two aspects, of course. One is what I just discussed from the Keno Upanishad, where Swami says, that Tejas is the spiritual power of the Atman. And in very beautifully he says, it is the eye of the eye, it is the ear of the ear, it's the tongue of the tongue. So that is Tejas. And on the other hand, you can consider Tejas as fire as well. So he says, because water has come from fire, the previous step is water. Fire is greater than water because water has come from fire. And then, of course, that fire, that life force, that is the life force which is part, like he says, Vidyule, it lives like the lightning.
Streak of light. Right?
Streak of lightning in our Sushumna Nadi. And that is the life force. Of course, all this is dependent on the Atman, which is the ultimate. So, this whole hierarchy of...
then, of course, Swami says in the end, when you understand the life force, you will understand Tattvamasi.
Tattvamasi. That's it.
My God. I think in the clips to follow, Swami explains a bit this particular paragraph.
Yes.
And of course, the importance of prana, importance of water and fire and tejas. So I think we'll go to the next clip.
Right.
A small example. Pachamu dinamulu manam aharam ga teesukunnakina pote 15 kadalu manlo cheenichipothayi.
When we don't partake food for 15 days, we lose 15 shares.
క్రమక్రమేణా మనం ఆహారమును అధికం చేసుకున్నప్పుడు ఈ 16 కళలు కూడా మనలో ప్రవేశిస్తాయి.
When once we start taking food, the remaining 15 days, you'll have all the 15.
అనగా దీని యొక్క అంతరార్థం ఏమిటి?
Then what's the inner significance of
this? శరీరము అన్నమయము.
The body is of food.
కనుక అన్నమయమైనటువంటి ఈ శరీరం నందు అన్నము క్షీణించేటప్పటికీ ప్రాణశక్తి కూడా క్షీణిస్తూ వస్తుంది.
When once there is no food in this body, that energy of life is also on the decline.
కనుక శరీరము క్షీణించేది.
The body decays.
క్షీణించినటువంటి యొక్క ఆత్మ ఈ క్షీణించే శరీరం నందు ఉంటున్నది.
That atma which is permanent is present in this body.
దేహము పంచభౌతికము.
The body has got 5 senses.
దేహము కూలక తప్పది ఎప్పుడు.
It is bound to die.
దేహి నిరామయుండు.
That indweller is
permanent. కణతింపక దేహికి చావు పుట్టుకలు మోహ నిబంధ బంధనలు ముద్రలు లేవు.
The indweller has no birth or death. It doesn't carry any stamp.
దేహము చూడ ఆ దేహియే దేవదేవు.
That indweller is God himself.
కనుక క్షీణించేటువంటి ఈ శరీరమునందు క్షీణించినటువంటి యొక్క ఆత్మ నిరంతరము ప్రకాశిస్తూ ఉంటుండాలి.
Atma shines effulgently, permanently in the body, which is temporary.
అట్టి నిత్య సత్యమైనటువంటి ప్రాణతత్వాన్ని అర్థం చేసుకోవడానికి ప్రయత్నించమన్నాడు.
You should make an effort to understand that the real truth, that is permanent.
అదే అరుణి తన కుమారుడైనటువంటి శ్వేతకేతునకు ఏది నిత్యమో ఏది సత్యమో దేనిని తెలుసుకుంటే సర్వమును తెలుసుకున్నవాడవుతావో దేనిని చూచినప్పుడు సర్వమును చూచినవాడవుతావో దానిని గుర్తించునాయన అని ప్రబోధించాడు.
The same thing is taught to the son of Svetaketu. If you see that, it amounts to seeing everything. If you understand that, it amounts to understanding everything in this world.
కనుకనే మానవుడు గుర్తించవలసినటువంటిది ఒక్కటే.
So there is one thing that man has to recognize.
ఒక్కదాన్ని మనం గుర్తించుకుంటే అన్ని అందులో లీనమైపోతాయి.
If you understand one thing, it amounts to understanding everything.
కనుకనే ఆ ఒక్కటి ఏమిటి? అది ఆత్మతత్వము.
What is that single one? It is atmic nature.
ఈనాడు ఆత్మవిశ్వాసం కోల్పోతున్నాము.
Today we are losing self-confidence.
ఆత్మకాని అనాత్మ భావములు అన్ని కూడా మనం తెలుసుకుంటున్నాము.
We are understanding everything other than the ఆత్మ.
మనం చేయవలసిన సాధన ఏమిటి ఇప్పుడు?
What type of practice we should undertake?
ధ్యానమా, యోగమా, జపమా, తపమా, యజ్ఞమా, యాగమా, క్రతువుల?
What is it that we should do? Is it meditation or penance or sacrifice or yajna or other kratulu?
ఇవి ఏవియు కాదు.
None of these.
ఒక్కటి మాత్రమే మనం గుర్తించాలి.
One fact we should realize.
అనాత్మ భావాన్ని వదిలిపెడితే ఆత్మ మనకు సాక్షాత్కారమే అవుతుంది.
When once we are away from that which separates us from atma, everything is understood.
ఏ సాధనలు చేయనక్కర్లేదు.
You don't need to do other practice.
ఈ సాధనలు అన్ని కూడాను కేవలము అల్పమైనటువంటి మనస్తృప్తి కోసం చేసేటువంటివి.
All practices are undertaken for self-satisfaction only.
ఈ చేసే సాధనలన్నీ కూడాను మనసు ద్వారానే చేస్తున్నాం.
All practices we undertake with the help of the mind.
మనసు ద్వారానే చేసేటువంటి సాధనలు మనసును ఏ విధంగా అరికట్టగలదు?
Those practices that you undertake with the mind, how do you expect to control the mind?
దొంగను పట్టగలడా?
Do you expect a thief to catch hold of
తానే దొంగ అయినప్పుడు తనను తాను పట్టడానికి ఏమాత్రమో ప్రయత్నించడు.
He being himself a thief, he cannot catch hold of himself.
అదే విధంగానే మనస్సు మనసును పట్టడానికి ఏమాత్రమో ప్రయత్నించదు.
Similarly, mind can never understand the mind.
మనస్సును మనము అమనస్కం చేసుకోవాలి.
We should make ourselves free from the mind.
అమనస్కం అనగా ఏమిటి?
What do you mean by amanaskama?
సంకల్పరహితమే అమనస్కము.
The thoughtless absence of thought, సంకల్పరహిత, is అమనస్కము.
కనుక సంకల్పమును మనం క్రమక్రమేణా మనం సన్నగిల్లించుకుంటే తప్పగా ఆ మనస్సు యొక్క ప్రభావం తగ్గిపోతుంది.
When thoughts subside, the effect of the mind also will be on the decline.
కాన మనము ఆత్మవిశ్వాసంను అభివృద్ధి గావించుకోవాలనుకున్నప్పుడు ఈ దేహ మనోబుద్ధుల యొక్క ప్రభావములన్నింటినీ కూడాను ఈ ఆత్మనందే లయం చేసుకుంటూ రావాలి.
Therefore, when once we decide to develop self-confidence, we should understand the body, the mind, and
ఏ సంకల్పములు వచ్చినప్పటికీ వాటన్నింటినీ కూడాను ఆత్మలో ప్రవేశపెట్టాలి.
Whatever thoughts that emanate, we should see that enter into atma.
ఇది సరైన సాయుధ్యము.
This is real సాయుధ్యము.
ఈ సాయుధ్యము అనేటువంటి తత్వంలో ఏకత్వమే మనకు లభ్యమవుతుంది, కానీ భిన్నత్వం శూన్యమవుతుంది.
ఇన్ దిస్ మర్జర్ సాయుధ్యము వి ఫైండ్ ఓన్లీ యూనిటీ బట్ నాట్ డైవర్సిటీ.
కృష్ణ, యమున, కావేరి ఇవన్నీ కూడా ప్రవహిస్తుంటాయి.
రివర్స్లీ గోదావరి, కృష్ణ, యమున, కావేరి ఫ్లో.
కానీ ఈ ప్రవాహముల యొక్క రూపములు వేరువేరుగా కనిపిస్తాయి.
They flow in different fashions.
దీని యొక్క రుచులు కూడాను వేరువేరుగా మనకు రూపొందుతాయి.
Their tastes also differ.
అన్నీ సముద్రంలో చేరిన తర్వాత
When once they all merge in ocean,
ఈ సర్వ నదులు కూడాను తమ యొక్క రూపనామ రుచులు కోల్పోయి సముద్రం యొక్క రూపనామ రుచుల్నే పొందుతాయి.
All rivers lose their name and form and become one with the ocean.
అది ఏ బ్రహ్మవిత్ బ్రహ్మైవ భవతి.
That amounts to Brahmavit Brahmaiva Bhavati.
Andulo cherinappudu taanu kudunu andulo roopanni dharistadu.
When once it merges there, he also assumes that form.
Aatmayandu samasta sankalpamulu cherchinappudu taanu aatmagaane roopondutadu.
When all thoughts merge into atma, he also becomes atman himself.
Kanuka atma kanedi ee jagattulo marakati ledu.
Therefore in this world there is nothing other than atma.
దైవము కానిది ఈ జగత్తులో మరొకటి లేదు.
దేర్ ఇస్ నథింగ్ అదర్ దాన్ ద డివైన్.
సర్వము దైవమైనప్పటికీ మనము దైవ దృష్టితో మనం చూడటం లేదు, లోక దృష్టితో చూస్తున్నాం.
దో ఎవ్రీథింగ్ ఇస్ డివైన్ వీ డోంట్ లుక్ ఇన్ దట్ వే బట్ వీ లుక్ ఇట్ ఫ్రమ్ ద వరల్డ్లీ స్టాండ్ పాయింట్.
దైవ దృష్టిలో చూచినంత కాలము కూడాను ఆత్మతత్వం మనకు అర్థం కాదు.
సో లాంగ్ యూ లుక్ ఎట్ థింగ్స్ ఫ్రమ్ ది వరల్డ్లీ పాయింట్ యూ కెనాట్ అండర్స్టాండ్ ఆత్మ.
ఉదాహరణ,
హియర్ ఇస్ ఎ స్మాల్ ఎగ్జాంపుల్.
దీనిని టంబ్లర్ రూపంలో చూచినంత వరకు కూడాను ఇది టంబ్లర్ గానే కనిపిస్తుంది.
So long you look at it in the form of a tumbler, it appears so.
ఈ టంబ్లర్ దేనితో చేయబడి ఉంటుండాలి?
With what material it is made up of?
వెండితో చేయబడి ఉంటుండాలి.
It is made up of silver.
ఈ వెండి దృష్టి చూసినప్పుడు టంబ్లర్ మనకు గుర్తుకు రాదు.
When you look at it from the standpoint of silver, you don't look at it as tumbler.
మరొకటి, ఒక తిరుపతికి వెళ్ళాం, ఇంకే విధమైన క్షేత్రాలకి వెళ్ళాం.
Another thing, like Tirupati, other pilgrim center you visited.
ఒక స్వరూపం మనకు కనిపిస్తుంది.
You witnessed a form.
స్వరూపమునందు దృష్టి ఉంచినంత వరకు కూడాను ఆ స్వరూపం ఏ యొక్క పదార్థంతో చేయబడింది అనేటువంటి మనకు తెలియదు, ఏమాత్రము తెలియదు.
సో లాంగ్ యువర్ లుక్స్ ఆర్ కాస్ట్ ఆన్ ద ఫార్మ్, యు ఆర్ నాట్ బాదర్డ్ ఆఫ్ ది మెటీరియల్ ఇట్ ఈస్ మేడ్ అప్ ఆఫ్.
దృశ్యం పైనే మనం ఇది పెట్టినప్పుడు అది కేవలం రూపం మాత్రమే కనిపిస్తుంది.
When once you concentrate on the form, you find that form only.
కాని ఆ రూపము దేనిచే చేయబడినది అని ఆధారమైన భూతం పైన మనం దృష్టి ఉంచినప్పుడు రాయి కనిపిస్తుంది కానీ స్వరూపం కనిపించదు.
When you think of the material it is made up of, you only witness the rock but not the form.
కనుక ఈనాడు రూపనామముతో కూడినటువంటి జగత్తు పైన మన దృష్టిని ప్రసరింపజేస్తున్నాం.
Therefore in this world we have been visualizing everything in the form.
కనుక బిడ్డలు, మేడలు, గుట్టలు, చెట్లు, వనములు, రివర్లు అన్ని కనిపిస్తున్నాయి.
We find the rivers and the buildings and the mansions, different things in the world.
అన్నింటి యొక్క ఆధారభూతమైనటువంటి తత్వాన్ని గుర్తించుకున్నప్పుడు ఇవన్నీ కూడాను ఏకత్వంగా పొందిపోతాయి.
బట్ వెన్ వీ అండర్స్టాండ్ ది బేసిస్ ఫర్ ఆల్ దీస్ థింగ్స్ వీ కెన్ అండర్స్టాండ్ ద యూనిటీ.
వృక్షములంతా కూడాను కాష్టమయము.
ది ఎంటైర్ ట్రీ ఇస్ మేడ్ అప్
పర్వతములంతా కూడాను కేవలము ఒక విధమైన రాతిమయము.
మౌంటైన్ ఇస్ మేడ్ అప్ ఆఫ్ రాక్.
భూమి అంతా కూడాను కేవలము మృణ్మయము.
The earth is made up of
దేహమంతా కూడాను కేవలము రక్తమయము.
Body is made up of blood.
ఇవన్నీ కూడాను పంచభూతముల యొక్క స్వరూపమే.
All these are the forms of fire.
ఈ పంచభూతములు కూడాను ఎక్కడ చేరుకుంటున్నాయి? కేవలం ఆత్మ ఎందున్నటువంటి అంశములే. మనం చక్కగా అర్థం చేసుకుంటే ఇవన్నీ కూడా సులభంగా మనకు అర్థం అవుతాయి.
When you understand atmic nature, you can understand the remaining things.
ఎన్ని రకములైనటువంటి జ్యువెల్స్ అయినప్పటికీ, అనగా ఆభరణములు ఉన్నప్పటికీ,
there may be any number of ఆర్నమెంట్స్ ది జ్యువెలరీ,
ఈ ఆభరణములు ఎంత ఉండేటువంటి ఆధారభూతము బంగారు ఒక్కటే అనేటువంటి తెలుస్తుంది.
ద బేసిస్ ఫర్ ది ఎంటైర్ జ్యువెలరీ ఇస్ ద గోల్డ్ ఓన్లీ.
దీనిని ఆనాటి సాధకులందరూ కూడాను మహర్షులందరూ కూడాను ఏకత్వాన్ని ప్రబోధిస్తూ వచ్చారు.
ది ఏన్షియంట్ సెయింట్స్ అండ్ సాధక్స్ ప్రాపగేటెడ్ యూనిటీ ఓన్లీ.
శృంగారములు వేరు, బంగారం ఒక్కటే.
ఆర్నమెంట్స్ మే బి డిఫరెంట్ బట్ గోల్డ్ ఈజ్ వన్.
పశువుల వన్నెలు వేరు, పాలు ఒక్కటే.
The colors of the cows may be different but milk.
జీవ జంతులు వేరు, జీవుండు ఒక్కటే.
The beings may be different but the indweller.
జాతి నీతులు వేరు, జన్మం ఒక్కటే.
The nationalities may be different.
దర్శనములు వేరు, దైవంబు ఒక్కటే.
The visions may be different but God is one.
మూల జాతులు వేరు, పూజలు ఒక్కటే.
There may be different forms of flowers, worship is one.
తెలియలేకను మానవులు తెలివి తప్పి బ్రతుకు కోసము బహుబాధ బద్ధులై ఈ జీవనోపాధి నిమిత్తమై ఇన్ని రకములైనటువంటి యొక్క భావంను మనం పెంచుకుని మన జీవితాన్ని చించుకుంటున్నాం.
ఫర్ ది సేక్ ఆఫ్ లివింగ్ వీఆర్ లివింగ్ ఇన్ దిస్ డైవర్సిటీ థింకింగ్ ఆఫ్ ద ఫార్మ్ అండ్ నేమ్ అండ్ వేస్టింగ్ అవర్ లైఫ్.
So luckily this clip has a lot of examples. So the theory section is over, I guess.
Right. In fact, Swami starts with beautiful analogy of a beautiful fact that if you don't have food for about a fortnight, 15 days, he says the body gets weak and so does the prana. but you cannot stay without water. And then he mentions about Uddhalaka and Shweta Ketu.
Right, I think that's again from the Chandogya Upanishad. And, I mean, in fact, this entire part is more or less what that conversation between Uddhalaka and Shweta Ketu is.
The story which Swami mentions about in that chapter in the Upanishad Vahini, he says this Shweta Ketu, who is the son of Uddhalaka, becomes lazy. And he says he is happily spending his time without studying. And a very beautiful point, he says, a Brahmin who does not study the Vedas is only a Brahmin Bandhu. Means people, his family are, he is only a relative of Brahmins. So a student, a Brahmacharya, a Brahmin who does not take to the study of scriptures is only a Brahmin Bandhu. He is just a relative of Brahmins. He is not a Brahmin himself. So Uddhalaka thinks that he should be set right, and he sends him for education to another guru. So he goes there, and by age of 23 or 24,
right,
Swami mentions.
Right. At the age of 12, he is sent, and he comes back after 12 years.
12 years, okay. Right. And he has mastered all the forms of knowledge, and he has come back three times heavier in the head, I suppose, with a lot of ego. And he says, after all, I know everything. And then this classic question is asked, do you know that knowing which everything else is known? And I don't know what Shweta Ketu saw at that time.
Right. I mean, this actually is a very, very beautiful concept in Vedanta itself. You know? Knowing that by knowing which everything is known.
Everything else is known.
Like the first time I heard this, interestingly, was from my chemistry teacher.
Is it?
You know, Narhari sir from Vrindavan. He used to tell us how you should prepare for an exam.
Okay.
He said, don't go around reading every fact in the textbook. You know, learn that concept by learning which you understand the, you know, the subject.
Very true.
So you see, you should learn that in that way, because that is the whole idea. All the problems and all the things are given so that you learn the concept. And after that, of course, when I read the source, it is so beautiful, because you know that's the perfect way in which this father is straightening his son. Because here is the head-weighted fellow, and he's saying that, have you learnt everything? He said, yeah, I've finished everything, all that has to be learnt. And then father asks, has your guru taught you that by knowing which you know everything? And of course, he explains a little more, I think, by hearing which everything that needs to be heard is heard. And almost like that Kung Fu Panda, you know, you will hear everything, you will see everything.
Once you have the dragon scroll.
The dragon scroll.
That's right. And ultimately what happens?
Right,
the dragon scroll just reflects you yourself.
Right.
It's a very beautiful movie, actually.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, precisely, Shweta Ketu is like, I mean, here is, till the previous moment, he's full of ego and full of himself. And suddenly he realizes, oh, there is something which is so profound and I have not learnt it.
Right.
And he actually doesn't believe. He says, how can there be anything like that? How can knowing one thing give you the knowledge of everything?
Everything. I think then his father says, stop your food.
Okay.
He says, stop having food. And so he stops having food. And then at the end of 15 days, when the guru, when his father asks him questions, he is not able to answer because he has no memory, because he has no energy. And so because of lack of food, he has no energy, he has no memory, everything is lost. But his father gave him permission to drink water. So basically he survived on water for 15 days. And for 15 days he just survived on water, and he had no memory at all. He just couldn't answer anything. Nothing came to his mind. Then his father said, now you go and have food. The moment he had food, his entire memory came back.
Wow. So it's beautiful, because the previous clip, what we played last week, precisely what Swami is telling.
Exactly.
That some things, with your life going away, the memory goes away, which means all the knowledge which you've gathered, that goes away. I mean, that's what Udalaka is demonstrating. Mm. Because Swami says that as you 15 days when you reduce your food,
right,
the prana slowly reduces. You know,
exactly.
The effect or the effulgence of the prana reduces.
Mm.
I mean, along with it, the memory also diminishes.
Most scientific approach.
Right.
It's absolutely a scientific approach. You go, experience it yourself and come
right.
back. Then I think Udalaka starts teaching Shvetaketu with... many examples. He gives him many examples, and some of the examples Swami has quoted here, but he has mentioned it more elaborately in that
Upanishad Vaini.
Right. He says, if you know the mud, you're not concerned about the pots. It's the clay, it's the mud that makes the pots of difference. Like the gold.
Mm-hmm.
It is one gold that makes the different bracelets and the ornaments. And then he gives this beautiful example of a banyan tree. He says, where does this huge tree come from? He says, go and pick the fruit. And then he says, break the fruit. And then he says, what is inside? He says, a seed. There are many seeds. You take one seed, then you break that seed. Then he says, what is inside? He says, nothing. He says, keep in mind that that nothing is the cause for this huge tree. I mean, that what is... contained in that small seed, the whole tree is contained in the small seed, and the seed is the cause for the whole tree. So the manifested is from the unmanifested, or the basis, that is the Atman.
Right.
And another example he gives him is that of salt and water. He says, although you cannot put your hand and pick the salt, the moment the salt is dissolved in water, it becomes one with water. Just by tasting it, you know
right.
that there is salt in water.
And that's what he says, you know, when he tells that if you know the mud, the pots may be of different sizes, but you know what the pot is made of.
Adharam,
so you know all the pots.
Exactly.
He says, if you know the mud, you know all the pots. If you know the gold, you know all the ornaments.
All the ornaments.
So he says, find out what is that which makes this universe.
Right.
Which is giving rise to this universe. So if you know this, you know the universe. You know everything.
Mm. Yeah. In fact, it's not a digression, but the same teaching of Udalaka to Shvetaketu in the Upanishad Vaini, there's another beautiful point. He says, what is this mud? See, you're talking of the mud and the pots.
Mm-hmm.
That mud is Sat, that is the truth. He says, that truth is, it exists. So that isness, he says, that isness is the foundation of everything. That isness, he says... the isness exists. It exists. Basically, the Atman, the God, Atman, Brahma, whatever we call, exists without the necessity of the creation. So he says the isness is always there. When that isness is reflected on Maya, then it becomes, then the Ishvara comes. He says when that isness is reflected on Maya, that is the primal activity. So,
right.
because of that activity, the entire creation starts. And that is when Ishvara takes up the creation of the entire universe with the five elements.
So, and I was going back into this discourse.
Yes.
The next part is actually very, very important, because Swami starts with that question. The moment Swami says that question, we're all wondering what is it? Because Swami says, you know, okay, so this is it. This is the truth, and this is Tat, and this is, Tvam.
Mm-hmm.
So Swami says, what should you do now to achieve that?
Right.
Or to understand that, or to be, to remain in that understanding?
Mm-hmm.
Do you need to do tapam? Do you need to do, yajnas and yagas? What is need to be done?
Mm.
And Swami gives beautifully in just one sentence the answer, to remove, stop dwelling on things which are not related to the Atman.
Yes.
Right?
Reject whatever does not pertain to the Atman.
Right.
I mean, on one level we say everything is the Atman, and then what is it that we have to reject? We have to, like how we spoke of the sun and the millions of things that happen due to the sun. He says, I think somewhere else in the same Upanishad Vaini gives an example. There is the sun, and there is water in this pot. The reflection of the sun is wavery. It's not steady in the pot. Is it the fault of the sun? It's not the fault of the sun. The water in the pot is going up and down due to the wind and due to various factors. So you cannot say that the sun is unsteady. You cannot say because of the limitations of our senses and our perception, we cannot say that the Atman is not steady. So when it's actually said, remove what is not the Atman, he says, don't limit it to the senses and to the mind. You have to go beyond that.
Right. And of course, in this part where Swami says, you know, when I was listening to this, and Swami says, let the mind dwell on things which are associated with the Atman.
Mm-hmm.
It's a, you know, going back to the same discourse I was telling about Dhyanam and Dhanyam, Swami says.
Mm-hmm.
Swami says, similarly, everything which you do in life, in this physical life, is required for two things, the gross and the subtle.
Right.
So where is your focus? Swami says that's what defines your living, your life.
Mm.
So in that Swami says even education. Mm. Education is for life.
Mm.
Education is also for a living.
Mm.
So what are you pursuing education for? So you can still have education for life and use it for a living.
Right.
But if you pursue education only for a living, that will define the way you pursue education.
Mm.
So similarly, Swami is saying, you know, Swami would often say this, what about the food you eat?
Mm.
Are you eating food for the sake of eating, or are you eating food so that, you know, the food is necessary to sustain the body, so the body can be used for something nobler? So the way you approach anything, that, you know, Swami, I think the simplest way I can think of is, you know, when Swami says you're the body, mind, and the Atman.
Mm.
If we can ask ourselves how many actions which we do are done with the belief I'm not this body and I'm not this mind.
Exactly.
You know, whatever you do with greediness, whatever you do with a selfish idea, you know, I get into a transaction, what do I gain out of it? I think all of this results from the idea that I am this body and I am this mind.
Yeah, it results from the idea that I am separate from the other person.
Right, exactly.
I am independent. So, you know, then you are at a state where somebody is gaining happiness, you are happy. Somebody is having pain, then you are pain. You become one with everybody.
Right. Again, going back to the movies, there is this movie called Ivan Almighty.
Yeah.
Seen, you know, where God comes down and makes a congressman in the U.S. build an ark.
Right, right.
Okay, right. At one point, he explains what is an ark. You know?
Okay.
He writes that A-R-K.
Mm.
And he says, what is an ark actually?
Mm-hmm.
He says, a random act of kindness.
Beautiful.
Okay. Mm. That's a random act of kindness. That's what he says. And if you actually look at it, that's when, like, suppose I'm walking on the road, I am for no reason helping somebody who's never going to get back to me and help me in life.
Correct.
So, which means I'm doing it absolutely with, you know, nothing to gain, nothing to benefit this body or this mind. Let's say that nobody is going to see me and nobody is going to praise me or some, you know, I do something, I'm not even going to think about it later in the day and say I've done some goodness. Now, even that would be like some gain for the mind.
Mm.
But a very random act of kindness, and you just forget it completely when Swami says, you know, do selfless service, and do without expecting anything.
Mm.
I think all of that is related to this, what Swami is saying, can you do more and think more about that which is related to the Atman,
no,
and oneness.
In the same example of giving something to somebody spontaneously, I mean, there is no mind there because you're not thinking. You're not pausing. You're not thinking. Because so when he says amanaska, you have to go beyond the mind. You have to actually, it's prompted by the Atman. The action is directly prompted.
Of course, here the translation was in the state of mindlessness where, you know, you go beyond the thought. But in Telugu, it was so beautiful, no? Sankalpa rahitame amanaskamu, Swami says. That without any thought, as you said, that spontaneity of, you know, that moment, what it needs, you do it.
So, that's what, then he says, all your sadhana, all your thing is just for purity of mind.
Right.
Like, if, so again, I think Swami has given this example. If, you know, it's like the water in the vessel. And if the water in the vessel is turbulent, it is dirty, and it's like the mirror. The mind is like a mirror, as Swami told very beautifully in the 1990 series.
Right.
And it has those three reasons why it is blocked.
Vikshepa, mala, and...
Mala, vikshepa, and avarna.
Avarna.
So he says, so the only thing we need to do is clean the mind and remove the mind. Then all our actions, all our doings are directly prompted by the Atman.
Right. In
Well, it's not only removed. That's the purpose of life. It's not easily said.
I mean, in fact, that's what Swami says. You know, that will a thief ever want to catch himself?
Arrest himself.
And really the case of, I think, the current situation, be it in politics, be it in policy making, everything.
Right.
Like, for instance, probably a little away from the topic.
Mm.
They're saying that there's one thing if the policy makers in our country do,
mm-hmm.
which will solve all our problems,
okay.
that is to bring some kind of electoral reforms, right? You know, they want
okay.
to change
mm.
a little things in the election.
Mm.
But why would they do it? Because they are the ones who are exploiting it.
Correct.
And you're sending the same people to the legislature and you're mm. hoping that they will change, mm. you know, the way we would do it. It takes for a lot of goodness. In fact, something again going away from the topic.
Mm.
There is this TED talk about, I think he's the Bhutanese prime minister.
Mm-hmm.
Recently also somebody forwarded that. In that he says, they have a lot of love for their king.
Okay.
In fact, he says the people did not want democracy.
Mm-hmm.
The king wanted democracy.
Okay.
They were all very happy with monarchy.
Mm.
But the king said, no, we should have democracy. The mm. world is moving forward, we should have democracy.
Mm.
And he created a constitution
mm-hmm.
where he added the clause that the people can impeach the king.
Wow.
If they feel the king is not up. I mean, imagine mm. the king introduces that in the constitution.
Mm.
And he says every king has to retire by the age of 65.
Wow.
Right, you know, that's precisely what we are talking about here, because when will the mind stand up and say, let me control the mind?
Hello,
you know?
I am the culprit.
Right, you know, that how will the mind get up and own up its mistakes?
Right. Mm.
And of course, Swami says it's very difficult. In fact, I don't know whether it's in the 1990 series or in some other discourse,
mm-hmm.
where Swami tells how the mind will resist.
Mm.
And even some other writers, philosophers write about it, how the mind will resist.
Okay.
And one classic example of that is, you know, all of us turn to spirituality
mm-hmm.
because we want to go beyond the mind.
Mm.
So the mind will tell, you know, till you go after money,
mm.
it'll give you pride about being a rich man. You go after knowledge, it'll give you the pride of being a knowledgeable person.
Mm.
When you turn to spirituality, the mind will say, all right,
yeah,
I'm a spiritual person, right? You know how the mind finds all kinds of means to
Correct.
Resist.
Yeah, and in that 16 types of pride which Swami mentions, he says the most difficult and the ultimate pride is spiritual pride.
Right.
If you think you're spiritual, that's it. That's the end of it.
Yeah. I think it's Ramesh Balsekar who says, you know,
mm-hmm.
he says all of spirituality
mm.
is trying to convince the mind to commit suicide.
That's true. That's
and
true.
He says the mind does not want to do that.
Exactly.
So all your tarka, all your force,
mm.
your cajoling, everything mm. you use to mm. make this mind commit suicide.
But at the same time, you know, how beautifully only like Swami can explain. He says the mind is like a small child. It just wants to run around.
Right.
Run around. The child is going to run around. Don't follow the child. He says, like the mother walking behind her child. Yes, the mother will leave the child, but the child always knows the mother is there. If the mother keeps running behind the child will run further. If the mother just stands back, the child will just look for some time around. It will come running back to the mother.
Absolutely. In fact, when you're saying about that example of the sun,
mm-hmm.
the sun is not responsible for what happens under its rays, you know.
Exactly.
The whole idea is that try to pretend like you're the, you know, sun. Try to pretend like you're detached, at least to start with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, that's what in one of the discussions in the bhajan hall, Swami says, live with the conviction that you are God. Live, let every action of yours, you know, be aligned to the idea that, yes, I am God. Then automatically you will start falling.
I think that's what Swami told these, if I'm not wrong, the Hyderabad youth,
mm-hmm.
when they had an opportunity to be with Swami, they asked Swami this question.
Okay.
So Swami, you keep saying that we're all God and we should realize that we're God.
Mm.
Doesn't sound easy, Swami. How do we get there?
Mm.
And Swami very simply said, what do I do?
Mm.
I keep saying,
mm.
I'm God.
Mm.
You also keep doing that.
Beautiful.
Right? And of course, it's not just the saying, as Swami said in this discourse.
Mm.
That saying should express as mind, as memory, as thinking, as the will, right?
Yeah.
That will, everything, all that idea that I am God or I am everything is one should express itself in all of these things.
Mm. You know, see, finally, yes. What is it that you should do? I mean, a question comes. okay, fine, I have got this knowledge. What is it that I should do? There is a beautiful, you know, I'm sure you have seen that video of Sarvapriyananda, Swami Sarvapriyananda,
right,
speaking to the IIT students, right, in Kanpur. Very beautifully explains this whole concept. He says, your actions are prompted by your vasanas. Okay. Those vasanas are not in your control. Okay. And by the time you try to control the vasanas, your action is done. Once the action is done, then you regret it. Oh my God, I just wish I had not done that.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, now this is not in your control. The vasanas are not in your control. The action happens. And after the action has happened, you cannot undo it. It's so he says, then Lord Krishna, I believe in the third chapter or so, puts a beautiful clause in between. He says, between the uncontrollable vasanas and the action which again is not controllable, there is one stage, raga dvesha. He says, you get a thought that is prompted by your vasanas, but then you have the buddhi at that point, raga and dvesha. Do I like? You should go beyond likes and dislikes. Then you automatically, your action will be in tune with the Atman. So, you know, it's like, what do I do? I mean, okay, this is the concept. This is the concept. The concept is, yes, actually I'm Atman. Every action I should do based on that.
Mm-hmm.
But then the mind is made up of these vasanas, is guided by the vasanas. The vasanas guide you. Okay, do this because I like this. I don't like this. Swami says you have to go beyond the whole idea of like and dislike.
In fact, I think in another discourse, Swami says, you know, when you say, what am I supposed to do?
Mm-hmm.
Very, very beautifully, four lines Swami gives, you know, what each of us can start practicing. Mm-hmm. It's originally the words of Chanakya, I believe.
Okay.
Where the words are, you know, Bhaja Sadhu Samagamam.
Yes.
Tyaja Durjana Samsargam.
Bhaja Sadhu Samagamam Kuru Punya Mahoratram.
Kuru Punya Mahoratram. Day and night do good deeds. Mm-hmm. You know, deeds of selflessness, deeds of goodness.
Smara Nitya
Anityatam. Where Swami says this, you know, constantly ask yourself, is this associated with the Atman or not?
Correct.
Is this eternal or is it temporary?
Beautiful, yes.
That constantly doing that. Because I think in the same talk, Sarvapriyananda says, you know, that small window which is available for you,
yes,
that will to, you know, follow or not follow, that gets strengthened by satsang, actually.
Exactly.
The company that you keep, and when I would probably say that satsang is the number of the company that you keep which will make you believe more that you're not this body and the mind.
Correct.
Right, you know, that's, in this context, satsang means that. Because
yes, it's a company of good thoughts, rather.
Right, company of good thoughts.
The mind should be in the company of good thoughts, not convincing itself that, no, I am this body, I am the senses. The mind should be in the company of the good thoughts that I am the Atman.
Right.
That is, I think, and that.
Precisely, that's what Swami did, you know. I mean, even before we started this program, I was saying, 1991, what were those kids thinking, you know, listening to all this? But that is what Swami did, you know, whether our minds, you know, are prepared for this knowledge or not. You're constantly being told this. You're constantly being told, you know, as part of your education.
Right.
You're constantly told, you're not this body, you're not this mind, you're not this, you know, you're divine and there is only oneness and everything is one. Whether at that stage you're able to comprehend it or not, it becomes a fact which gets entrenched in your memory.
Right.
And as Swami said, memory is what rules your decisions.
Right.
At some time, this will actually wake up and rule the kind of decisions that you make in life.
Very true.
So I think in that way, it is so beautiful to go back to Swami's discourses and listen to it again and again. There is no distortion. You know, you're listening to it right from Swami's voice.
Mm.
I mean, this is not Swami's work. This is not Swami's interpretation.
Exactly.
This is not a gospel which was heard by somebody and recorded.
Very true. I mean, that's the power and the beauty of this whole thing. You can listen to him, actually listen to him,
right,
his voice.
And what a beautiful thing it is to listen and to contemplate Shravanam and Mananam.
Right.
And as always, with prayers that Nididhyasanam happens.
Yes.
So with that, dear listeners, we'll conclude this week's program. On behalf of Sanprakash and myself, we offer this humble effort at Swami's lotus feet. Thank you all for being with us. If you have any thoughts, if you have any suggestions, and if you have any thoughts to share on this discourse which we are talking, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu for his last segment of today. Thank you for being with us. Join us again next week. Jai Sai Ram.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai.